Welcome back, folks, to episode 44 of the Running Man Self-Regulation Skills and Self-Improvement Project podcast with me, your host, Dr. Armando Dominguez, PhD in health psychology, licensed professional counselor, and also an adjunct professor at a local community college. And what we're going to be discussing today is going to be intrusive thoughts. And since this is about self-regulation, we'll be discussing a couple of points on how to understand what happens when we have these things, to whom it happens to, and also what can I do to minimize those and how can I continue doing what I'm doing, especially when they get really uncomfortable. So to start off with, what we're going to discuss is kind of how our mind works relative to whenever we have thoughts, because often whenever we have something that's in quotes a negative thought, we don't pay attention so much to what we've done, and that is pass judgment on whatever the content of that thought is, but we also tend to overfocus on the fact that whatever it is that we've judged as negative is bad. Or that somehow, because I can think it, that somehow I have become bad. I identify with it, which means I start having emotions and I started adding weight to it. So we no longer have a discrete thought that makes us uncomfortable that just kind of popped up randomly. And this happens with us as humans. But now we've not only added content, but we strengthened it by adding attention to it, judging it, categorizing it, negative versus positive, bad versus good, and also adding energy to it, emotional energy, and then how our physiological body responds to that. And if it's particularly compelling or we're conditioned to responding to things in a way that's socially appropriate because maybe we grew up in a very judgmental home or one wherever harsh judgment was levied and you had to act a certain way or else you'd be in trouble, which means you did not advocate on the behalf of what would be the prevailing ethical guideline. Which means if not everyone was acting aghast and gasping and saying, oh my God, then you were set aside or you were shunned or told that it was time for some re-education or punishment as a result. And that could be problematic. So that was a pretty deep description of what we call the process of judging our thoughts. But whenever we have intrusive thoughts and they come on really quick, we have to understand that we as humans have these things on occasion, and it does not reflect badly on us in the fact that we're able to entertain such thoughts. Just because I can think about killing a thing or a person as a mental exercise, in quotes, then does that make me capable of doing that? Well, not necessarily. You can think about really bad things and not do them, or you can entertain a really bad thing when somebody tells you that somebody did that, but that doesn't make you a bad person. What we're talking about is how we relate to it, and if I identify with that, and if I generate it, that does not necessarily mean I'm a bad person. That's called problem solving, because we have to look for those things that are potentially painful, or those things that are negative, or potentially something that could cause problems in the future, and that's predictive planning. Sometimes we do that to get an idea as to how things are going to go, so we can kind of plan how we're going to respond in our environment. So what does this have to do with intrusive thoughts and self-regulation? Well, a whole lot, to be very honest. If we're going to regulate ourselves, we have to realize, what is it that I'm regulating? Well, one is our physiological response, because it's not all in your head. Just because you have a thought, whether it be depressed or anxious, nervous or scared, we have a physiological cascade of neurochemicals and also hormones such as adrenaline and noradrenaline that go into the system to either relax us or to cause us really stressful warming of the body, sympathetic tone, so that we can get ready to fight, flee, and run. And these happen whenever we have thoughts. It's not just merely a discrete, it's happening in my mind or my brain thinking. These aren't just brain thoughts. These are thoughts that impact our body, and we react to them in a way that often our body responds, because our body, our lower brain from our brainstem, and what we'd call a reptilian complex or our complex, that's not the word maker part of the brain, and it's definitely not the reason maker. It is a part of us that's the reactionary aspect that has to do with making sure this vehicle is able to hightail it and climb, run, jump, and fight and not be the bologna sandwich. And if you are, you get eaten. So that being the case, what I want us to consider is the fact that whenever we have thoughts, it's not a discrete thinking process, and we're going to call this subjective. But when we think about stuff that's out in our environment, those are the objective things. Because we can go up and touch a couch, we can touch a broom, we can go and find a chair and put our hands on it, and whatever we call it, label it, or name it in our mind, that's the subjective part. Most of you are aware, but the objective part is the part that exists out in our world, so to speak, that we interact with our body and can touch and feel or taste or smell or perceive with our five senses for the most part. So why is it so important to differentiate this? These are simple things, you would think, but actually they're very compellingly difficult to separate whenever things are stressful. And I'm trying to make sense of things, especially whenever I start feeling guilt and shame for having thoughts that are negative, especially if they kind of pop up in a very sudden hurry and they take us by surprise. And then we have things along the lines of this thought line of, I can't believe I thought this. I can't believe that. I would never do that. And we start having the guilt and shame after the fact. Not only do we judge the thought that was negative or intrusive, but we start judging ourselves as bad because we were capable of thinking it. And yes, that is with a questioning tone, because whenever we have folks that are doing good things, they go through a life. And why do you think they're good? Because they're able to entertain the idea of bad and know the difference and maybe align and consider themselves in alignment with the principle of good, higher good, and helping others. But without knowing the dark and the bad, we wouldn't have that contrast. So by default, you're already entertained in the negative. But does that mean that you're going to act on the negative or be negative or somehow identify with that or be bad because you can hold that in your mind? Well, of course not. That's absolutely silly. Doesn't even make reasonable, rational sense, considering how our neurology is wired and what neuroimaging is showing us, that much of what happens to us is preceded by happenings in the lower brain that have nothing to do with a higher reasoning, but eventually the signal splits off within that 1.2 seconds and gets to activate our higher reasoning that we do our best building in mathematics with, that we do our best reading and reasoning with, but yet it's the least powerful part of our brain. We can only function at those whole high levels of thinking whenever we're physically safe, when our assumption of safety is met in our environment. So now that I've made that point, the next part is that is really important relative not just to be able to entertain thoughts, but also, what about when someone tells us don't think of something? When somebody tells you no or don't, that tends to highlight or emphasize what it is that we're telling somebody no, don't, or no, let's not do this. But yet it becomes a little more tasty somehow to our mind. It becomes curious. It raises curiosity. And for those of us that don't like being told what to do, what does it do? It makes us want to figure out or do or engage with that thing we've been asked not to. All of a sudden, it's just been elevated to a level of curiosity, not mere subjectivity, just a thought. And it's not just a simple object that's equal to everything else. Now it's more than equal. It has value. And it may not be valuable money, but rather value in the sense that it draws our interest. And if we understand that, we understand that our mind works on positive, objective reality. This doesn't mean that there aren't negative objective things out there. There are. But what I'm doing is lining up the terminology so we can have this discussion. The next part of the terminology is the negative subjective reality. And the negative subjectives are the things that we're told not to do, not to say, not to think, but yet we're still unable to unthink those things. We to essentially unthink them or not think them, we'd have to unthink them in reverse somehow and erase them, which we can't really do. The only thing we can do is avert our attention onto something else. But if somebody tells you, and this is the horrid example that people just love to use all the time, don't think about a white elephant. That is what's called a frontal loading, and in hypnosis, that's called front load, and also priming the subject. And it doesn't always have to be a visual picture, but in this case, it's going to be visual since we're talking about intrusive thoughts. Rarely do we have intrusive thoughts that are a verbal narrative, like we're reading a book. Well, I'm feeling anxious, so therefore, I feel like shaking my partner or striking them. Or maybe if you're a new parent, wherever you're holding baby, you may not be wanting to do anything, but the first thing you see is probably the most horrid thing, like something that could harm the baby, dropping the baby, or maybe even injuring the baby's soft spot. But it's not so much that you intend to do it, but what your basic brain does, it sees in visual and it shows you things like, don't do this. But it's telling you not to do it, it's telling you not to do it or things to avoid in a sense, but it doesn't have any preposition to it. It is not speaking in sentences, it's speaking in baby talk. It's speaking in symbology, sometimes things that are very direct, actual pictures, and is drawing off of memories and things and constructing memories based on what you already have. That's called eidetic memory. Those things that we develop as memories that we see in our world. Not unlike this example, if you see, and we're going to do the eidetic memories and constructive memories exercise, and the first thing is that we're going to ask you, I am, we, me, myself, and Armando, to think about a baby, a cute little baby, and it doesn't have to be yours, it can be someone else's, maybe even a picture, it can even be a little puppy or a kitty, a little kitten, just imagine something cute and cuddly and fuzzy that you like, could be a duck if you like ducks, and what I want you to do after you have that in your mind is think about the biggest, bushiest black beard that you have ever seen in your life. Notice those are two things at some point in your life you may have seen and you have a memory of. May have been a picture, may have been someone you've seen, but you've got that and you've got the little ducky or the kitty or pet or even baby. Now that you have your cute picture and you have your beard, what I want you to do is superimpose that beard over that little duck, kitty, baby, or puppy, and see the reaction that you have. Often some of us may giggle, some of us will be finding it hard to suppress a laugh or a smile. Some of us go like, oh wow, almost like I can't believe it, that incredulous, I can't believe I made that happen. Well, the fact is you did, based on two things that you already had in your mind that you brought up based on the cue that I gave you. Please think about baby, think about beard. Now place the beard on the baby. Ha ha, this is funny. We made a memory based on two things that actually may have existed and developed one that didn't. And this is kind of how an intrusive thought works. We take and do something to get our attention, the bearded baby, and made you laugh. And in some cases, whenever it's something that's of really high importance, like taking care of a baby. For new parents, this is hard. It happens to both men and women. The intrusive thoughts happen in 90% of the women with what's called perinatal depression, also anxiety, and also with postpartum depression that can last about 3 months after the fact where the intrusiveness comes up. But a lot of exhaustion is happening, so it's part of our survival response at the non-speaking, visual thinking level. And it happens to about 88% of new fathers as well. So the men and women both, I'm validating you here. And we have to understand it's not one or the other. And there's not one weaker or stronger sex or sex that is more better suited, so to speak. That's bad English, but we'll ride with it, to being a new parent, because it's a challenge for both. And just because mom carried baby doesn't mean they automatically become blessed with the mommily power, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're perfect moms. They're not. Same thing with dad. Dads have a hard learning curve too, and I had that, and I was a 30-year-old dad whenever my son's mom, my ex-wife, now ex-wife, and I had our first baby. She was 27. I was 30. I was 30 years old. You'd think older, more mature, easier, and I'm going to say no to that. That was difficult, and it was incredibly life-changing because my identity and my roles changed. But when I say identity, it really changed and rocked my world. It took time, months, before I got to wherever I started feeling like I was growing into the shoes of being a new parent. Now, intrusive thoughts can happen to people that aren't new parents, but that's just the most powerful example I have right now. But just to give you an idea, but the point I'm making about the intrusiveness is that often whenever we're tired, when we're exhausted, those things that we want to do and do really well and not fail at or feel like we can't afford to make a mistake, and in case of somebody that depends on us completely, such as a newborn or even a pet or a kitten, and we make a mistake, and I don't want to say they suffer, but they can as a result of lack. And whenever we have thoughts like this, it just is our body telling us, our basic self telling us there's something wrong. There is stress, and also avoid these things. It's trying to take care of us, but why would it show us that? Because it speaks in pictures. It doesn't speak in well-formed sentences that have structure with a subject-object preposition, but you do see the object of whatever it is it doesn't want to happen, or what you wouldn't want to happen, but it can't speak it to you in an eloquent sense where it says, these are probably things you shouldn't be doing because these are harmful to your little one, to your baby, or your pet, this sort of thing. So keep these things in mind. Our brain, it speaks to us in pictures, and when it does so very quickly, about 400 milliseconds. 150 to 300 milliseconds is the range where we can still recognize the thought, but it's hard to stop. But often that lower brain fires off emotional content, which means our amygdala is involved, and it determines whether or not it's a fight-flight reaction or if it's an approach reaction where it could be something that's very useful to us. But often if it takes us by surprise, and if it's of importance, the picture is particularly shocking, it can be, well, if it's particularly intense, it can be shocking. I'll put it that way. And this is where we get into the self-regulatory aspect. Whenever we have thoughts, we must learn to suspend judgment. And this isn't anything new. There's nothing new under the sun, but it is very effective. I've used this often whenever I've had to get physical with patrons sometimes, or even whenever in self-defense situations where I couldn't afford to make a judgment and only deal with what was going on as a fact, not something I have an opinion about. And same thing whenever we have thoughts, if we quickly jump to judgment, because if we grew up in a very conservative or extremely harsh and punitive lifestyle, wherever any little mistake was punished, or anything that would be considered outside of the realm of the lines you should be walking within would be punished, then you would have very quickly learned to judge yourself very harshly, very quickly, and put on the social veneer of aghast or shock or disapproving. And this is wherever things could become very uncomfortable. Whenever we quickly disapprove or judge, this is where it couples with that very intrusive thought. The best thing we can do is to suspend judgment, wait. Literally, if you have something like that happen, a physical technique that works very well is to exhale first. Just blow out. Then inhale. Exhale. Inhale and exhale. Do about two or three after you've exhaled first. Don't suck wind. Don't gasp, because when you gasp, that wakes up the sympathetic nervous system, wakes up the body, increases heart rate, and increases muscular tension, and gets you ready for fight flight, even if it's just a thought. Even with just the thinking of something that is what we would call, in your best of reasoning whenever you're at your calmest, abhorrent or ghastly or terrible. No one doesn't want to hurt little ones or loved ones or do anything that would be illegal or damaging or harmful to oneself or someone else for that matter. But whenever things pop up, it's whenever we judge those things that we tend to identify, because we know that the thought came from us, but that doesn't make you evil. Now, just because you can think about what someone else did that's negative, why doesn't that bowl you over? Or maybe it does whenever you allow yourself to get engaged and start having thoughts and overly focusing, and we start doing what's called ruminating. We start to become obsessive about the thought, and then we can't stop thinking about it because it gives us a charge and it empowers us, but at some point it becomes ugly, becomes uncomfortable, then it becomes ungainly and out of control. So these are some things that I just wanted you to be aware of. But the first technique, breathe out. Whenever you get stressed, breathe out first. Blow out. and then allow yourself to breathe in and breathe out. Do not suspend your breath. Allow yourself to breathe in a natural cycle and do so flexibly. This is a tool that helps you relate to what it is that's going on with intrusive thoughts or thoughts that are uncomfortable. Don't judge yourself harshly. Notice what I did. I said don't. I spoke in a negative. What you don't want to do, what you want to avoid, that sounds better, doesn't it? What you want to avoid doing is judging yourself harshly, because whenever we judge harshly, we've categorized and we've negated. We called something bad or negative. We have therefore added weight and value to it in the direction of negative and judgment. And if I thought that, doesn't that mean that somehow I'm responsible for it? Well, yes, it does. But just because you can think it doesn't mean you want to do it. It just means that the way we think in diametric oppositions, black, white, up, down, very concretely, whenever we're under stress, especially when we're surprised. When we're relaxed, we're able to entertain abstract and see the continuum of good, bad, better, best, optimum, and in the other direction as well. Now, one of the things that I have to make a point of, and I want you to remember, and this is the take-home part of this, whenever we tell somebody not to do something, or don't do something, or no, we have to realize that that is not a natural part of our language interpretation. Now, we can speak it very naturally and say, no, nah, nope, not going to do that. But whenever you tell somebody not to think about a white elephant, don't think about a white elephant. What do they have to do first? They got to think about that elephant before they start trying to stop it, which they can't at that point. They've done it. And our brain is wired to seek those things that are in our objective reality that are outside of us that can be harmful. So we tend to be very quick to hold on to those details. We're not wired to be happy first. We're wired to seek negatives first and deal with those as potential problems. And then we develop what's called predictive programming to make sure we're not around those things that could hurt us or that are negative, bad to us. So that's natural. But whenever we get really good at staying away from those things, our potential for happiness goes up. And realizing that we're not made to seek the negatives. There's no such thing as a no or a negative that exists that you can put your hands on like you would a chair, a couch, or an elephant. And our body responds to those things as an objective, positive reality. Those exist. So we think about them. And if they're negatives, and if we have feelings with it, once again, it adds value. So those thoughts get strong, then we feel like it's somehow our fault. And somehow because of that, we're bad as a result. We are the vessel and we're not dirty because of that. We have to entertain the negatives to know how to protect against them, but also how to prevent them. And also so we can know by contrast, what is not good for us, what is not healthy. And those are protective mechanisms that once we understand, that gives us a whole lot of room to not only understand ourself, but other people and have compassion and patience whenever those types of thoughts come up, and also give ourselves a chance by not judging ourselves and realizing that we can observe those thoughts. We can observe them. We can observe them and not attach to them. We can observe thoughts and not have judgments about them. We can just look at them as a third-person observer, not involved. And when those thoughts happen inside of you, it doesn't mean necessarily they're yours and therefore you have to act on them. My dumb question for the day is, do you believe everything that you think? Most of you will say no. Then why do we believe intrusive thoughts? Because often they're very powerful with the emotional content. It doesn't make them more, doesn't make them true, doesn't make them real. But it tricks our body into responding. So that's where we have to breathe out before we start inhaling, because we don't want to suck wind and awaken a sympathetic nervous system, which makes us more apt to be suggestible and more quick to believe those things that we think just because we think them. So with that, for now, we're going to go and close. And I want to tell you, thank you for your time. Thank you for the opportunity for letting me visit with you. And please share this with people that you think this will be useful to you, not just the new parents, but old parents, people that have had experiences with intrusive thoughts that are not parents at all, that may struggle with anxiety and thoughts that are really uncomfortable. Let them know there's hope. Let them know that we're not broken because we think this way. It's because we're wired this way and because we're human. And share this with them and like, follow, and share. and hopefully all your days are going well. I'm certainly happy to be talking to you today, and I look forward to visiting with you again soon. Take care. Walk well.